This is Ranger Kidwell Ross, editor at WorldSweeper.com and the director of the World Sweeping Association. I have on the line with me a man that we'll just call John, and the reason for that is he has signed a non-disclosure for one, and for two, we don't really, there's no need to have any identifying information about him, you know, whatsoever, because we're just trying to get this information about buying and selling a sweeper company out into the sweeperverse, shall we say. John is a successful business person. He had significant capital to be able to put into purchase of a sweeping company. And he wanted to take advantage of an SBA, very favorable SBA loan situation that was revolving around the 2020 coronavirus. And that's the only factor that put a timeline on this particular transaction. But the information you'll hear about really pertains to anybody that is looking to, on the one side, sell their sweeping company, and on the other side, buy a sweeping company. And what we want to do today is to evaluate some of the issues and bring out for potential buyers and sellers of sweeping companies some of the issues that you're going to encounter, that the bank might require, and so forth. So with that, John, why don't you go ahead and you know, tell your story. You looked at a sweeping company. You wanted to purchase it, and when you got down to the nitty-gritty, there were a variety of problems, I know, that showed up. So anyway, thanks for telling your story, and go ahead.
All right. So we had, you know, kind of looked into the sweeping business, and to phrase someone that I know well that had said, I like to make money while I'm sleeping, you know, it was something that they were phrased to while they were asleep, that their parking lots were being swept. So anyways, with that being said, that, you know, we were interested in a company that we could possibly acquire that did a lot of property management, mainly parking lot, you know, management things, and the sweeping industry was perfect for that. We had some, you know, all other ideas. We wanted to add certain things to it that would complement the maintenance, whether it's, you know, the seal coating and striping and things like that. So, you know, after, you know, a long search, we kind of ended up, you know, kind of finding one particular company that we were interested in. We began the process, you know, contacting the broker, and we went through this process. And it was, you know, it was a very interesting process of going from start to, you know, to, unfortunately, we didn't get to the finish line, but basically, you know, getting the, you know, the particulars of the business, some of the financials, and getting a little bit more of an understanding of what they did, and, you know, analyzing it. So, as you had mentioned, you know, this year the SBA interest rates have gone way down, so that the, you know, a typical SBA loan was in the 7.5 to 7.75 area, and they're down now in the 5 range, so it was pretty good. But the SBA also had put out a program under the CARES Act that they would pay the first 6 months of all payments, interest, and everything for a business. So, you know, typically a 10-year loan, the business is really only financing 9.5 years, paying for 9.5. So quite an attractive a deal for us. But, you know, throughout the process, it was interesting getting into the due diligence side of things. And I think it was, you know, important to note for, you know, anyone, say, I'm speaking from the selling point of view, that as a buyer, you know, trying to look at the revenues and cash flows of the business, you know, it's sometimes it proved difficult because so many of the owner's discretionary earnings are involved in the numbers, and you have to titrate out what expenses were, you know, attributed to the business side of it, or which were attributed to the owner side of it. And, you know, with most people understanding that when the owner's spending money that's outside of the business and putting it through, it affects the cash flow. So, you know, a lot of times when looking at a business, most, you know, businesses, they're looking at the cash flow, but you're always having to add this factor back in of these owners' discretionary earnings and what are they spending their money on. Well, you know, so if the cash flow is, say, $100,000, sometimes there's $25,000, $30,000 that the owner has spent on their, you know, own personal things that they want to add back into the factor. So it always proves difficult. So one of the brokers had commented that if they just wished that their sellers would would for 3 years not spend money on their own to make things a lot more straightforward. And I had heard that, and then I witnessed it personally in my situation. So, but anyhow, so...
So, John, you know, just to clarify, you're saying that when the owner buys a boat for $25,000 and includes it in the business of sweeping, it's maybe fine for him while he's not trying to sell his business, but when he tries to sell his business, that's going to be a serious, questionable issue.
Exactly. So, you know, a lot of times people have vehicles as an example, and they might buy a vehicle and say it's for personal use, but meanwhile, it's a fun car to drive for their wife or something of the sort. So, you know, as you get into it, Ranger, you're absolutely right. Like, it became something that you had to look at more closely, and it didn't affect the numbers, but all those extra expenses make the numbers look worse. So from me looking at something coming in to buy, I'm saying, well, what is the cash flow of the business? So I have to obtain a loan to buy the company, and presumably have to get it my own personal salary, or if I was hiring someone to run it, I have to make sure that, you know, the business can service the debt and it can pay the loan, but then to pay me or pay an employee, and at the end still have a return on that, and, you know, that investment. And a lot of times, the personal spending habits of the business owner started to get in the way. So you start running into a situation that I call the numbers say this, but it's actually this, this, and this. And so where, speaking as the buyer now, I'm looking at that number and I'm paying, you know, if the cash flow is $100,000 and there's a factor of three, meaning that 3 years of that cash flow, the business is evaluated at $300,000. But then, you know, a lot of times all those earnings are kind of hidden within the spending in different places, whether it be into, you know, repairs and maintenance. Meanwhile, it's on their own personal stuff. So that then the seller turns around and says, well, no, there's actually $20,000 more there. So they want you to pay $360,000. So you get into this kind of debate between what's real and what's not. So as you said, anyone selling their company should be seriously, you know, looking at retiring or selling in the future should take that into consideration put the credit card away for some personal expenses.
Well, one of the things that really caught my attention in this was when you got into the nitty-gritty of the accounts that the sweeping company had, that's when you really ran into issues. Now, you can pretty much evaluate and argue back and forth and come out to a negotiated number on what we've just talked about so far. But the question is, you know, how many, what accounts they have, who the accounts are with, and so forth. And especially in this case, as I recall, you found a real sticking point in a Walmart contract with the accounts that were with Walmart, which were a number of those, and that the Walmart Master Service Agreement states quite clearly that it's up to Walmart at their discretion whether to allow a new owner to take over those contracts. And that's unfortunate, but it is reality. And they were doing this through a third-party vendor, which also complicated things. Talk about that a little bit. And your reluctance naturally is that you can't buy a business. And what did your bankers say about that as well? If you purchase the business and only after you purchase the business would you find out whether you got to keep a substantial portion of the contracts of your business, that's not going to fly.
Yeah. Yeah, that was... You know, one of the things that in most of the contracts, it's the term is assignability. So if you have a contract with ABC Sweeping and it's Walmart, or, you know, a lot of national chains have the same thing from their liability to protect themselves and make sure that their legal departments are happy. But as the person that's selling the business, in that assignability, you know, is a very important to the buyer. And so in the situation that I learned was that Walmart, according to the Master Services Agreement, Walmart did say if you sell more than 50% or more of the stock in your company, you have to obtain corporate permission to do that sign off, or if you're selling your company and you want to sign it, you have to obtain corporate approval for that. So that was something that's just not, it's not just Walmart. It would be, I'm sure, places like Home Depot and Lowe's and, you know, Walgreens and national chains of pharmaceuticals, pharmacies probably have that same kind of deal. I'm sure, I haven't personally talked or seen any of those, but that ultimately became a position. And, as a buyer, that became a very big part of it for myself, because I looked at it and saying, if I'm going to take, a risk of buying that company, and there's a major contract there that really produces, a vast majority of the revenue of that company, I have to be very careful and ensure that I'm following their guidelines and that I'm adhering to them, and that I can maintain those contracts, assuming for the, that when I take over the company, that I'm doing a good job. I'm assuming that, and I'm sure there's cases where people, don't do that. But, for this purpose of our conversation, assuming that I'm going to do a good job, I need to make sure that those are there, and obtain those approvals. So, as you mentioned, the bank, and so it's part of it. I was doing that under my own personal due diligence, and making sure that my money is safe and that I'm taking, I'm taking a risk, but it's a more educated risk. Where I did kind of learn something that was, after discussing the situation with the bank, that the bank actually informed me that they would go through those, and they recognized that this particular business, it didn't have a lot of customers. It had some pretty, a number of good contracts with a couple of major retailers, but they would insist before they would close the loan that they had the all the proper written documentation that would allow for those assignments. So, not only was it me doing it, I was surprised a bit that the bank was like, no, we'd investigate that in our appraisals and everything. We'd go through it and make sure. So, something is that even though you're negotiating with a potential buyer on something like that, there is ultimately, if you're using a bank, that they probably are going to verify those cash flows, and they're going to ensure that those cash flows remain in their new buyer's hands and the person that they're backing on the loan. So was interesting.
Yeah, let me break in there to say what was the feelings on the part of the seller? And mind you, we invited the seller to be part of this conversation. They declined to do that, and so we are staying anonymous with this, but that part doesn't matter. It's the facts are the same. Now, when the seller would potentially, I would think, have an issue also with, let's using Walmart as an example, going to Walmart and saying, I'm looking at selling my business, would it be assignable under this circumstance or that? And now you're alerting, the tail that wags the dog that you're looking at getting out of your business. And, what are their options? They have a 15-day cancellation anyway that they can do pretty much for whatever reason they want. So I could see where the seller would be a little reluctant as well. And something that I put to Dale Brantley, who until recently was the head of exterior services for Walmart, is that there needs to be in that master services agreement some kind of criteria where they would allow, in other words, some kind of financial strength monitor where you answer the questionnaire, and if it comes out to this score or above, then they must allow that assignability. But when it's subjective to somebody's opinion about whether they would allow the business to be assigned or the contract to be assigned given the sale, then I think both the buyer and seller are in a huge limbo.
Yep, I agree. Because, and I will say this, I was very, I completely, I try to put myself in somebody else's shoes, and I completely understand that the seller would have concerns that you don't want to go, as you say, notify them ahead of time. And for whatever reason, the deal fell through, and whether that could cause some, cause some issues with their contract in the future, the loyalty component, who knows? Like, you just don't know. And when I tried to set it up so in such a way that the seller would stay on for a period of a year to ensure that, you know, to let his people of the contract know he's still staying with the company for 1 year post sale. He's going to retire and you know, but ensure the smooth transition. So, you know, we tried to do that. But as you said, where the problem came into it was is the reluctance of the seller, the insistence of the buyer as in me, and then the absolute end all requirement of the bank. So it was it just instantly became came to a screeching halt, and the deal couldn't close. You know, so if I had, you know, tons and tons of cash that I just wanted to throw at it and I was willing to take that huge kind of risk and, you know, then so be it. But, you know, I would definitely not, you know, I think no buyer would like to wake up 2 weeks after the sale and get their 15 days after and have their rebidding process from their major corporate client that represented the majority of the company, you know, thrown at them. So, you know, it'd be very, like, it was risky for both people. So it's hard, a very difficult situation to overcome.
Well, certainly would be. What do you have? Coming out of this on the back end, did you have any ways of solving it? I mean, there is one thing that I learned that I want to make sure to bring into this, which is this company was working for its Walmart contacts through a third-party provider. And it turned out when I talked to Mr. Brantley, who is no longer with Walmart as their exterior services manager, but after working for the company for, I believe it's 31 years, he certainly had a handle on how things work there. And what he said was that this particular third-party provider was in charge of those sweeping contractor accounts, and that they could put a sweeping contractor into place without a Walmart master services agreement. So it would really be their decision, he said, because you wouldn't have to notify Walmart because you would be able to work under that third-party provider's agreement and not have even applied for the master services agreement. And that was news to me. So that's something that somebody could look at. We found that out after the fact, after you had contacted me. And how this started was that John had contacted the World Sweeping Association with the ideas of getting advice about, you know, purchasing a sweeping company, and we went on to assist. So there's that out there, and whether that exists with other third-party providers, that's something that somebody might ask that question, and you'd certainly want to, because you might, in this case, you would have been able to get around the Walmart Master Services Agreement, but we only found that out when it was too late to qualify for SBA and so forth. So are there any other lessons that you'd like to bring out or comment on that?
You know, I think that, you know, in that situation, you know, too, is that there was some information within the third party, you know, vendor that was conflicting. So when one person, you know, and then give the seller, you know, his credit, he was contacting people, but he was getting differing opinions from people. And, you know, going from there, so he had a lot better knowledge of the situation with the people he was dealing with. But as from an outside buyer, all I was, looking at, I got a contract that has an assignability clause to it, you know, so, and it said Walmart. And when you say, as you've mentioned, you know, with Dale Brantley, it said that it, you know, it was up to that third party. But even unfortunately, we got conflicting information that, and I tease sometimes in the bureaucracies, the left and the right hand don't know what each other are doing, but, you know, it happens. And that was a bit confusing for, you know, to navigate through that system. And you know, ultimately, you know, it didn't work out. But somehow or another, I think that, you know, that's the lesson to be learned is that, you know, if that's the situation, people are using Walmart as an example. If you have the contract with Walmart direct and corporate, then you know that. But if there's a third party, then, you know, it might take a little more legwork to find out the true and accurate information.
And I don't know that availability of not having being under the master services agreement is the case for all third party vendors either. This was apparently the case for this particular one. So and I don't want to use their name. So that's something that somebody would have to do their own due diligence to figure out. So that's essentially the information we wanted to portray here. Is there anything else that do you want to add to?
You know, I think that one thing that was, you know, and I've actually had this particular business is one that I was trying, you know, to purchase. And I've had a couple other ones that we just touched base on and just a few things in there. And as I got into, you know, looking at buying something, you know, of this nature, I did a lot of research and, you know, making sure, you know, that I'm well versed in what I'm doing and, you know, some of the things I need to look at. And one thing in particular is that I think that is good for some of the people to know is that what the bank representative had also spoke to me about was, is that this, in this particular company's, you know, say portfolio of clients, there wasn't a lot of clients. There was a couple of big clients. And on one side of that, that was like, wow, they got some good clients. They got, you know, they're doing a good job, but it did have a, you know, the business valuation portion of it was challenged because it didn't have a lot of clients. So versus one other situation that, you know, I learned of was that, you know, and I remember reading it and the broker had listed the business and it said that not one single client represents more than 5% of the company's cash flow. And that, you know, and so from a risk standpoint as a buyer, that was very good at going into that because there wasn't a huge risk that, you know, you're going to lose. You know, in our case, in the case for me, if I lost one client, the company's value would be 30 cents, like on the dollar. It would have been seriously compromised. But in this situation, if you lost two or three clients of this business, it wouldn't even probably notice it on the cash flow. So something that, you know, that looking at it and people was looking at their own company and they're saying, well, I have this one major client and my company's worth X. And it actually is worth X with a little asterisk saying that yes, but that is actually making your company's, you know, valuation actually a little less because it is that vulnerable to one loss of that client. So that was something that, you know, I learned, you know, it through my stuff and dealing with the bank too, that they said that on their situation, they do look at those situations. And I know it's not always easy to diversify your clients, but just a point of note that in there, that was something that even went to the bank's level, that they looked at that as a something in there when they're doing their due diligence on the purchase.
Well, and to take that one step further, now it's not likely that that's going to happen with a Walmart or Home Depot or one of these box stores. But let's say that you have a sweeping company and their major client is a big construction company. So they do lots of construction sweeping. Very large portion of their business is with that construction company. There's no way to know that that isn't their cousin or their brother-in-law or
true.
You know, a friend they grew up with. So that may easily, with a situation like that, when it's a private company and that's who they do work for or a large percentage of their work for, you might lose that just because it was a friendship arrangement or a relative arrangement and, you know, might have been going on even though they're not particularly happy with the contractor. But, you know, can't fire Cousin Joe, but you certainly could the new guy.
Yeah, well, and that's, I think, as a buyer, that's the danger that, you know, the risk that you take is you're going in and looking at everything. And so with that, as you say, the same situation in that you just mentioned is that as a buyer walking in, you would know it. And if that one client represented the most of it, mainly, especially if there was a contract situation, then, you know, the bank or the buyer should be looking at that contract. But if it's just to pick up the phone and call, you may not know that, you know, that could be the buyer beware sort of thing. And, you know, you could get burned on that. But sometimes the unknowns are difficult to deal with. But looking at it, you know, from the standpoint where I was at, I would be, you know, I like the bigger client, but I'd like a whole bunch of little ones too.
That's right.
That'd be nice. You know, I think a little sprinkling of the smaller ones on there just for an extra, that if you did lose the big one, you know, you'd still have something. But if you're only working for two and they don't, and they're both of them require a assignability clause, and you know, I think it exposed a little bit of a nerve there of,
you know,
a little fear there.
Yep, I could see where, and in this case, unfortunately, fortunately, the deal didn't go through. and I guess you still have your money to spend, you know, someplace else. But on the other hand, and certainly looking at it from the seller's point of view too, he wants to sell, you wanted to buy, and because of the way the structure of the business was at the time, there's really was no effective path forward to be able to do that. So that's the point we wanted to get across in this interview, and I really appreciate, John, you taking the time to do this, and I wish you the best of luck in, you know, whatever else you pursue or whatever other business arrangement you end up with. But I appreciate it very much.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think I can speak for many people. I appreciate all the work you do and the information. And I think, you know, for what it's worth, this may be helpful to other people. And, you know, if they're looking at something, and, you know, going forward.
Yeah, that's and it's one thing to, you know, for us to have worked together, but another one for you to be willing to spend another half hour of your time in order to help the sweeping industry, which you didn't end up being a part of. So it's very much appreciated. All right.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.